Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooke, founder of Homeopathy World Community. We're going to begin with a little bit of inspiration and talk a bit about current events. And also, the main attraction is to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is July 25th, 2010. This is session number 146 of Who is Reading the Organon, Our Goal. Since about 14 months ago, we started reading the Organon of Medicine, the foundation writing, a piece of literature that teaches homeopaths how to practice the art and science of medicine. I would like to remind everyone that this is a simple study session, and any listeners must consult their healthcare provider. If you are on the live chat, please introduce yourself. Yes, we do have a place for you to listen and comment and question while the show is going live. If you are not live, then you can listen to the download, the archives, and also on the website there, post some comments and questions. Share this with your friends on Twitter and Facebook. You can listen to the old shows, downloading them to your computer, iTunes, or iPod. If you are a professional homeopath and have colleagues who are in the homeopathy world community, you may place an application to join our community. And there are instructions right on the website to teach you how to do that. Today's inspirational quote, and I'm going to do two of them. One is from Edward Eslin Cummings, most widely known as E.E. Cummings. He was born October 14, 1894, and he died in 1959. He was a poet, very well-known poet, author, and a professor of sociology and political science at Harvard University. This little quote says, "To be nobody but yourself in a world which is doing its best, night and day, to make you everybody else means to fight the hardest battle which any human being can fight and never stop fighting." And maybe each of us has our own interpretation of what this means to you, that we are getting messages from so many places, whether it is from our own ego, from what we have been taught as children growing up, being told by family members or neighbors or people in different communities or even in the government, what to think and how to act. This, the hardest thing is to get in touch with spirit, to know your own vital force and what you need to be doing every day and in your lifetime journey, what your vital force and your soul mission is. Then we have Dr. Constantine Herring. He says, quote, "While he looked upon his son with so much desire, this was his thought. If that boy is permitted to grow up by God, I will give him lessons in thinking. Later on, always at a certain hour," he said, "I must go home now. I have to give a lesson to Samuel, a lesson in thinking. That boy must learn to think." And he did learn to think, and he dared to be wise. So we admire Dr. Herring for his dedication to his child, to his children, that he wanted to inculcate in them and instill in them the means to think for themselves and to become, as E.E. Cummings says, who he really should be. And because he had a desire to learn, to instill that curiosity, that innocence of learning about the world with an open eye. I'd like to encourage people to be on Twitter because we have an eye paper there, which is the Homeopaths Daily. Every day, there are new articles posted by many, many homeopaths around the world. Very interesting articles to read. And if I take a quick look and tour over there at the Homeopaths Daily, you just have to Google that, Bing that, and get there. There's an article by Homeopathy Info, and I know that those are folks in Fran Sheffield in Australia is writing about different articles. And she said, a weekend spent with people who don't believe anything. And this is an article by author Matt Hickman. He went to the International Skeptics Convention in Las Vegas, of all places, this past weekend. And he was looking for freedom from existential oppression and enlightenment, divorced from superstition. It would be very interesting for you to read that article and find out what he was talking about. I shall put the link on the chat if anybody comes into the live chat to listen. And that is in the Herald. It's very, very interesting. And then we've got more articles on the Homeopaths Daily. We've got a link to Kavitha Kukunoor's personal journey to homeopathy in America. I'm sure many people will be interested in learning exactly her dedication and persistence and her mental attitude that she had to overcome when she went from her homeland, India, a place of familiarity, a place of family where she had support, where she was already a homeopathic physician, practiced for many years, stepping off the plane into an alien foreign country without the language skills or the cultural skills to get along. And how was it that she did manage to survive and, in fact, reach her goal and dream of becoming a homeopath, a very well-known and practicing homeopath in America? And that is just two of the fantastic articles. We've got another one here. The Inner Traditions has published the recent publication by Dr. Sankar on Today's World, Discovering Your Animal, Mineral, and Plant Nature. And that's something that we also have a link to from the Homeopathy World Community website. And also today, I would like to introduce to you not only the inspirational quotes from masters, but the fact that Homeopathy World Community is a very lively, active, participating community, and to look over at the Clinical Tips group. We have many, many groups within the community where people congregate about particular topics, and this one is Clinical Tips. I'd just like to give you a short one. This is by Dr. Dushyant Kamaldari, who also is on Twitter. He has his Twitter name is Dushyant Dari, DushyantDhari, if you'd like to follow him and his tweets and activities. He says a quote from Dr. Pierre Schmidt, quote, high fever, great pain, great fever, strong fits of anger or emotional excitement shorten the action of a remedy and indicate repetition. Okay, this is a great hint and tip to know when you're going to need the homeopathic remedy that has been given and is well suited because it is a similimum and a similar energy to the display of symptoms by the patient, that oftentimes when there is this extenuating circumstances of fever, which kind of you can think it burns off the energy of the remedy, or that emotional anger, also liver energy, it burns off that energy again. Whatever those symptoms are, this incredible emotional excitement, that reduces the length of time, the duration that the remedy acts, and thus indicates we need to repeat it. And we know this occurs very often in acute situations where there's been shock and a person is beside themselves or hysterical, screaming, or in a very precarious situation of having a fever that can go pretty high. And as it's burning off this energy of the remedy, you know that you have to do it within a number of minutes, whether 10 minutes or 15 minutes, repeat again and again until it quiets that energy and takes a hold and actually returns the person to a state of normalcy, or figuring out exactly what is the next remedy that needs to act. As a matter of fact, Dr. Duchiant continues to say he feels the action of a constitutional remedy is cut short when any of these factors operate and a new complementary intercurrent remedy may be needed. Any one of these can cut short the action, the remedy action. So we've got good discussions going on here, and I encourage people to just, if you're not a member, you can always read any of the articles that and discussions that are being posted. We would also like to say, take a moment for a prayer. So many people around the world have been affected lately by traumatic events in the news. In Norway, we know and have heard about many being affected and loss of life to young people. A very shocking situation for everyone, and how to deal with these situations. The best that we can do is to pray, and it looks like I have lost connection. So I don't know whether you can still hear me, but I lost my connection. My computer browser shut down, and I'm not sure whether they've got any sound going on right now. So I'll just continue to talk, and I hope that you took a moment of prayer, of silence, for all those who have died. And I don't know whether there's any sound going on right now. But these are the things that we deal with on a daily basis. We've had brownouts due to the heat waves and not being able to... I think I'm going to call in again and see what happens. Hi. Hi. Well, we just had about an 8-minute outage, and this is life on the fast lane. This is life on live radio. When you're working as a host and there's no one else on the line with you and your computer browser has a crash. So we've had brownouts lately due to energy sources and heat waves and things like that. So we're just going to get, if anybody has been waiting with me, just saying a prayer while we were thinking of those who have lost their lives. It's a very sad situation for these families and how the world is going to deal with these kinds of situations. But we're going to move right along. I wanted to thank Roger Van Zandvoort, who recently arrived home from his trip to India. And hello, guest. If you're listening, I'm just thanking Dr. Roger Van Zandvoort for promoting and helping Homeopathy World Community with his Complete Dynamics computer repertory. And you can go to www.completedynamics.com to learn more about the modules that he has for case management, case analysis, and Materia Medica. What I love about the program is you automatically get updates. He announces it to you. You do not have to do anything. It's automatically downloaded to your computer if you just click the button. So we're going to go ahead and talk about the aphorisms and move as quickly through them as we can. Last session, we were talking about aphorisms 206 all the way to 228, I believe. And so now we're going to go ahead and, for those who are listening to jump in at this point, we want to give a little bit of a background. In 221, he was talking about how the homeopath approaches the patient when there's a situation when the patient is not all mentally together, not all there, is perhaps even in a state of insanity or mania caused by many numerous reasons of fright, anger, vexation, or abuse of spiritual liquors. And they have broken down. They are not, their vital force is not acting in a way that can be managed in the typical way. And he's explaining what you're supposed to do in the aphorisms here. He says, how often, for instance, do we not meet with a mild, soft disposition in patients who have for years been afflicted with the most painful diseases, so that the physician feels constrained to esteem and compassionate the sufferer. But if he subdue the disease and restore the patient to health, as is frequently done in homeopathic practice, he is often astonished and horrified at the frightful alteration in his disposition. So in that particular case, he's saying he's given the right remedy, but what happens is now the patient is behaving in a way that is atypical of what people normally see, that the vital force is sorting itself out, and a person who is basically calm is now all of a sudden asserting themselves or acting in a quite way that you wouldn't expect them to act until everything balances out for that person. And he gives another example. If a patient were, when well, is often obstinate and violent or hasty or even intolerant or capricious or impatient to desponding, those formerly chaste and modest often become lascivious and shameless. So you probably would not recognize the person when given certain remedies. But such a patient who has recovered from an acute mental or emotional disease by the use of these non-antisoric medicines should never be regarded as cured. So what he's been driving us to look at is that you might be giving a remedy in an acute stage of a disease or a disorder, where he wants us to get much deeper into that curative effect using the antipsoriasis. And in aphorism 223, he says, if but the antipsoriasis treatment is omitted, then we may almost assuredly expect from a much slighter cause than brought on the first attack of the insanity. So he's saying, you may have calmed down the situation initially using an antipsoriasis remedy, but whatever that trigger was that would instigate a response by the vital force, by that individual, to behave in a unsavory manner, whether it is in hysteria or anger or irritability or lashing out, whatever they're doing that creates that manic state. He says if you have not used the proper deep-acting antipsoriasis remedy, every time that person gets into that situation, it's going to trigger that mania once again, that state of insanity. You know, I think in our lives, everybody has fallen into a state of insanity. There is a quote, I don't know what it is offhand, but the overriding concept is that anytime somebody is in a state of anger, they are essentially insane. And I don't know anyone who has not, at some point, sometime in their life, been triggered to express anger. And if that is true, then whatever Hahnemann is teaching us in these aphorisms holds true for ourselves, that something can create this state of anger. Now, interestingly enough, when my internet went out today, I did not feel anger, but because it is such a commonplace activity, when you lose connection, you lose that communication, that you take it in stride and just hope that people are still listening out there. They will wait patiently for you to get back on the line instead of throwing a fit or whatever might be an insane type of behavior. And so Hahnemann continues to teach us more and more how to reach deeply into an individual and help them to learn coping skills and help their body and their mind and everything come together in a calm state of being. We're going to talk a little bit about that very shortly. What is peace? Then we talk about aphorism number 225. There are, however, as just been stated, certainly a few emotional diseases which have not merely been developed into that form out of corporeal diseases, that he's talking about tissue diseases, our organs, but which in an inverse manner, the body being but slightly indisposed, originate and are kept up by emotional causes. Here he's telling us that it is the mind, and we learn from gurus and people who teach meditation, people who teach relaxation and guided imagery, that so much of the body can be affected by what the mind is thinking, by our emotional state, whether we are in an even keel or we are moody. If there are a lot of ups and downs, or we have self-talk that is not helpful, then that actually affects the tissues at an organic, corporeal level. And he is telling us that 200 years ago, because of his wisdom, he says, continued anxiety, worry, vexation, and wrongs, and this frequent occurrence of great fear and fright. And we know today that the governments, and we get so many messages to remain in a state of fear for whatever is happening in our world, in our lives, whether it is the financial state of the country or international affairs or the political environment, socio-dynamics, whatever is going on in your world is going to affect your physical being, your material self. Now we have aphorism number 226. It is only such emotional diseases as these which were first engendered and subsequently kept up by the mind itself, that while they are yet recent and before, they have made very great inroads on the corporeal state by means of psychical remedies, such as the display of confidence, friendly exhortation, sensible advice, and often by a well-disguised deception, by be rapidly changed into a healthy state of mind and with appropriate diet and regimen, seemingly into a healthy state of the body also. So he's saying there are things that we can do by going to an expert, an advisor, somebody who we trust and talking to them, getting that support through their words, through perhaps things that they do to help you. That can put you in a better state of being. Or on the opposite of that is if you're not getting all of those things, if you're not able to get that support, that things are going to be all right, that display of confidence or friendliness that, you know, really somebody cares about you. If you're not getting all of those things, then you're not going to feel good about yourself and you will lose self-confidence. And then, again, it's going to go make inroads into the deterioration of your organs. So he says you actually have to use that as part of your treatment. If you're a homeopath, you want to give that display of confidence to support the individual, to know that there is something stable, something that can anchor the person in this corporeal material world, that there's somebody there that they can trust and go to for advice and help. Then we're going to go to aphorism number 227. But the fundamental cause in these cases also is a psoric miasm, which was not yet quite near its full development. And for security's sake, the seemingly cured patient should be subjected to a radical anti-psoric treatment in order that he may not again, as might easily occur, fall into a similar state of mental disease. So although the homeopath or the guru, the expert, the advisor can provide this sense of stability, these kind, compassionate words of security and safety, the person, the patient who is not completely cured is going to have to keep going back for more and more sustenance, more and more security and words of confidence, because it's not within them. They haven't developed it within their own being and are only getting it as a resource from outside of themselves. What Hahnemann wants is for that person to feel that confidence, that ability to move through life on their own energy. And to do that, he says, he keeps returning us to the idea that we need an anti-psoric remedy. So we're moving forward to aphorism number 228 to see what he says next in the aphorisms in his teachings. Quote, in mental and emotional diseases resulting from corporeal maladies, which can only be cured by homeopathic anti-psoric medicine, conjoined with carefully regulated mode of life and appropriate psychical behavior towards the patient on the part of those about him and of the physician, must be scrupulously observed by way of an auxiliary mental regimen. That's just the first paragraph in that aphorism, and basically he's reiterating again that you're going to have to use the homeopathic anti-psoric medicine in order to get results, and that the disease, whether mental or emotional, coming from a corporeal malady such as diseased matter, something that an infection, something that actually touches the organ through mucous membranes or somehow has attached itself to the body and a parasite or something, that the body is going to need assistance throwing off that disease and to annihilate it completely. So he's adding that not only do you need the anti-psoric medicine, but you also need carefully regulated mode of life. And so he's going to tell us, you know, when you, we just lost Amy Winehouse, and We have all these, take me to her famous song, she needs to go for rehabilitation. And that means she has to be taken out of the world in which she lives that is maintaining her mental and emotional disease. And so here Hahnemann is saying, conjoined with a regulated mode of life, meaning the person needs to be taken into a place where they're going to be taken care of, a place that they can feel safe, that somebody is providing for their needs, the basic needs that Maslow has provided: security, shelter, love, food, all these types of things that they know they're taking care of, and an appropriate psychical behavior toward the patient on the part of those who are about him. So the people who are the patient is in touch with physically, visually, hearing their words, they have to provide a soothing, calming environment that supports the individual. It takes a lot, not just give me a pill and I'll be better. That's not the way Hahnemann teaches medicine. He says that it's a very holistic way of treating the patient, and they need to be supported and cared for. And what else does he tell us? He says the physician must be scrupulously observed by way of an auxiliary mental regimen. So he's teaching the physician, the homeopath, how he must treat and behave while he's in front of the patient. He says, quote, to furious mania, we must oppose calm intrepidity and cool and firm resolution. To doleful, querulous lamentation, a mute display of commiseration in looks and gestures. To senseless chattering, a silence not wholly inattentive. To disgusting and abominable conduct, and to conversation of a similar character, total inattention. So he gives us three ways of acting when something is before us. And very often, let's say somebody is bullying you, and you're not, what are the steps that you're going to take? You often go home and maybe you're crying to your parent, and they say, well, what are the options they tell you? They say, ignore it, it will go away. So here Hahnemann in a way is saying at the end, to this abominable conduct, you give total inattention. Because if you give attention to this conduct, it's like giving feedback and feeding that abomination. We want to do the reverse. So in a way, this does not sound homeopathic, does it? Homeopathy is likes for likes. Likes cures likes. And here he's saying, well, when somebody's behaving in this way, we're not going to mimic it back to them. We're not going to mirror this behavior back to them. But instead, we're going to give it no attention at all. And then the other thing he says is for senseless chattering, he says, silence. So in the opposite again, that to mirror back in more chattering, he doesn't think that's going to work. However, he does say not wholly inattentive. So you might be looking and listening to this person chattering on and on and on, but you're not going to chatter back at them. You're going to listen to know that they are being heard, to give them a sense that they are being listened to, because everybody needs that, and yet not to give them a mirror image of themselves in that situation. Then he also says the first one he does is to oppose calm intrepidity and cool, firm resolution. We must oppose this to doleful, so we keep our calm. He's saying we keep our calm and we keep our firm resolution to the knowledge of homeopathy and what we're doing. So he says for querulous lamentation, he says when people are complaining, we give a mute display of commiseration in looks and gestures. So you know when somebody is in a state of grief, of when somebody is in a state of this, they are crying, they're lamenting. What words do humans have to give to another
in these situations. There are no words. And he knew that instinctively and tells us that we can only give our eyes as our mirror and our gestures, perhaps. Who knows whether it is to clasp your hands together or to reflect the other person's gestures in a hug or something that is going to provide some compassion toward their suffering. Hahnemann gives us those three ways of responding to those three different displays of the emotional state of the patient. And the third paragraph in this aphorism says, we must merely endeavor to prevent the destruction and injury of surrounding objects without reproaching the patient for his acts. And everything must be arranged in such a way that the necessity for any corporeal punishments and tortures, whatever, may be avoided. This is so much the more easily effected because in the administration of the medicine, the only circumstance in which the employment of coercion could be justified in the homeopathic system, the small doses of the appropriate medicine never offend the taste and may consequently be given to the patient without his knowledge in his drink so that all compulsion is unnecessary. And he has a lot to say right there in that third paragraph of Aphorism 228. He says, you're going to provide an environment to prevent the destruction and injury of the surrounding objects. And very often you'll say the insane manic person is put into an institution in a padded cell, which means that there's nothing that he can throw to injure somebody else or to injure himself, no sharp objects or a way that he could hang himself or whatever it might be. So he's saying that how do we provide this safe, again, environment for the person to express their malady, to express their disease, and be heard fully so that there is a compassionate listening doctor without reproaching the patient for his acts. So not only does the patient might already feel guilty for doing whatever inappropriate action or behavior or words that the person does, but to add on top of this misery words of punishment would be even worse. So this is just the witnessing of the homeopath to what is happening with the patient. And everything must be arranged in such a way that the necessity for any corporeal punishments and tortures, and just think about how insanity was treated in these institutions while persons were put into cold ice cube baths or shock treatment to alleviate their malady. I'm sure this is possibly done again today, or even the drilling of holes in heads. These things are detrimental to the spirit and body of another human being. And he says, Hahnemann tells us, we must avoid these kinds of tortures or restraints. This is so much more easily effected because in the administration of the medicine, so he's talking about the homeopathic remedy, the only circumstance in which the employment of coercion could be justified in the homeopathic system. So he's saying, you know, you never really have to coerce somebody to take a homeopathic remedy. I know there are persons in a hyoscyamus state who feel that they are being poisoned. They may not want to take the remedy. However, this is such small doses, such small medicinal doses using the homeopathic remedy that it has no real bad taste to it, nothing to be afraid of. Very often, there are even now sprays that you can use, put the remedy into a spray bottle and spray the skin or spray the tongue or spray the air that the person is breathing. These are many ways that you can provide the remedy gently and easily without coercion. So he says the taste never offends. You never have a bitter or a sour taste in your mouth from taking it. And we know that it is good and easily given to pregnant mothers, to infants, to young children who really even know instinctively that this is something good for them. And then they may consequently be given to the patient even without his knowledge in his drink. So again, in a previous aphorism, we learned how Hahnemann felt this kind of behavior by the physician could be justified. And it is justifiable when a person is behaving in a state of insanity. They cannot make logical and rational decisions in their life. And thus, like a power of attorney, the physician is able to give the gentle acting remedy. There is a footnote to aphorism number 228 that says, it is impossible not to marvel at the hard-heartedness and indiscretion of the medical men in many establishments for patients of this kind who, without attempting to discover the true and only efficacious mode of curing such diseases. I want to thank also the listeners who are in the chat. If you have comments or questions, I will readily try to answer them the best I can. Again, this footnote to aphorism number 228 says, it is impossible not to marvel at the hard-heartedness and indiscretion of the medical men in many establishments for patients of this kind who, without attempting to discover the true and only efficacious mode of curing such diseases, which is by homeopathic medicine and in parentheses antisoric means, content themselves with torturing these most pitiable of all human beings with the most violent blows and other painful torments. By this unconscientious and revolting procedure, they debase themselves beneath the level of the turnkeys in a house of correction, for the latter inflict such chastisements as the duty devolving on their office and on criminals only, while the former appear from a humiliating conscientiousness of their uselessness as physicians, only to vent their spite at the supposed incurability of the mental diseases in harshness toward the pitiable, innocent sufferers, for they are too ignorant to be of any use and too indolent to adopt a judicious mode of treatment. So here he's chastising, really, the physician who does not use the wisdom that he is providing to any physician who wants to read the Organon of Medicine and what he has learned about curative effects of homeopathic drugs, that there is a gentle means, and the physician does not have to stoop so low to be harming the individual, to have destructive behavior by drugging the person into oblivion or to use forceful means to get this person into a state of zombieism, I might say, where they're actually not able to, their self-vital force isn't a really truly alive to be their self, which goes back to our original quote at the beginning of the show. We have to fight to actually find and be our true self, as E.E. Cummings told us. And so we have also a metaphor, he says, toward locking a person up in a prison and a house of correction and turning the key on somebody. Locking them up and turning the key on them is not going to resolve their disease. It is putting them away in isolation and not assisting them in their healing process. Now we're going to go ahead and talk about aphorism number 229, the one that I posted today on the Blog Talk Radio show. Hahnemann says, on the other hand, contradiction, eager explanations, rude corrections, and invectives, as also weak, timorous, yielding are quite out of place with such patients. They are equally pernicious modes of treating mental and emotional maladies, but such patients are most of all exasperated and their complaint aggravated by contumely and deceptions that they can detect. The physician and keeper must always pretend to believe them to be possessed of reason. All kinds of external disturbing influences on their senses and disposition should be, if possible, removed. There are no amusements for their clouded spirit, no salutary distractions, no means of instruction, no soothing effects from conversation, books, or other things for the soul that pines or frets in the chains of the diseased body, no invigoration for it, but the cure. It is only when the bodily health is changed for the better that tranquility and comfort again beam upon their mind. And Hahnemann is truly a poet, truly a compassionate person, and must have used these techniques to cure individuals who were seemingly possessed of insanity or mental being unbalanced in their mental acuity. He also says here, you often hear the patient speak. Oh, this is, he has a footnote here to aphorism number 229. It says, the treatment of the violent, insane maniac in melancholy colic can take place only in an institution specially arranged for their treatment, but not within the family circle of the patient. And the quote, the comment in the chat says, Dr. Bob, how does the homeopath know whether or not the patient is lying or obfuscating, not really being truthful due to embarrassment? And this answer is based upon continuous experience of practice of the art and science of homeopathy. Hahnemann tells us in capital letters in aphorism number 229, the physician and keeper must always pretend to believe them, that means to believe the patient, to be possessed of reason, which means that the patient believes they are in this mental state. They believe what they are speaking. Whether it is a lie, whether it is truth, whether it is fact, whether it is fiction, the patient is living in this world, his own mental world. And thus you have to take that as fact from him or her in their state of being, because we have documented in the homeopathic repertory what symptoms homeopathic remedies possess, what they can create in a well-being. Thus, if you see a person who believes that they are being poisoned, if you see a person who believes that there are snakes out to get them, if you see a person who has tremendous fear of being bitten or fear of heights or delusion of one sort or another, or believes that he hears voices, and they tell you that because they have the compassion of the listening physician who they appear to be believing everything that they say, the homeopath can then take these symptoms and look them up in the repertory and find out what remedy matches their state of insanity, mania, delusion, fear, whatever it may be, and give them the appropriate remedy. So we don't want to subdue the patient. We want to let the patient's vital force speak their disorder clearly to you so that the homeopathic physician can discern what's going on. However, Hahnemann does say that you put that individual into a place that is secure and safe, a place where they cannot harm themselves or others. You do not want to give a person a gun or a knife or a bottle of pills. You don't want to put them in a situation that they can do any harm. And he even goes as far as saying that you want to, in the footnote, put them in an institution specially arranged for their treatment, but not within the family circle. Why would he say such a thing? Because obviously, if the person is in a state of insanity, mania, or derangement while in the family circle, this is not a healthy place. Perhaps it is a dysfunctional family. Perhaps there has been some trauma in that person's life. And every time they see the family and the members of the family and the dynamics of the family, it triggers once again, each time, more mania, more disharmony, more disorder. So we have Dr. Bobbitt says he seems that trust is a vital part of effective diagnosis between the homeopath and the patient. And that is absolutely correct, because we ask for the homeopath to learn to set the patient at ease, to put the patient into a place where he does not have to feel he has to hide, he or she has to hide anything. And when we do that, we get more information. When the person is set at ease, they become their true self, and we can see the disharmony and the disorder from their normal state of being to their disordered state of being when the patient can open up and speak freely. So trust is very, very important, and that is something that might take weeks, months for a patient to develop with the homeopath. So let's go back to aphorism number 229 and review this a little bit longer. And, you know, we only have 5 minutes left in this today's show. It went, an hour went fast, but we lost a lot of time while my browser went down. So he says here, on the other hand, you know, maybe we could go a little bit longer today. On the other hand, contradiction, eager explanations, rude corrections, and invectives are also weak, timorous, yielding, are quite out of place. So he's telling us that what you might normally use, let's say, for disciplining a child, to say, no, no, don't do that, don't touch that hot stove, or you're a bad boy. We should never say that to a kid anyway, because it's going to lower their self-esteem. You know, it's only things that we do, not their inner self, that are wrong sometimes. So, or even giving an explanation. So he's telling us, physician, mind your tongue, sit back and listen, watch and observe, and don't try to rationalize and give rationalizations or explanations for the behavior of that patient, because that's going to interrupt the flow of ideas from the patient, for one thing, and it's going to change the dynamics. So he says this is out of place. When somebody is out of their mind and manic or insane, these things are not going to be helpful to them. He says, and equally pernicious modes of treating mental and emotional maladies. So it's not a good idea to do that. And probably for the physician, it's going to take a lot of time to learn how to quiet the mind of the physician, to learn how to sit back and take notes, to learn how to put your thoughts aside, and even to the point of jotting down your own thoughts so that your thoughts can be put on the back burner while you're paying attention to the patient. Hahnemann says, but such patients are most of all exacerbated and their complaint aggravated by contumely, that is contumely. Let's look that word up. It means insolent or insulting language or treatment. So an example is, the church should not be exposed to gossip or contumely. So therefore, contumely could be equated with gossip or insulting language. He says also, Hahnemann says, fraud, a person who or a thing intended to deceive another person, typically by unjustifiably claiming or being credited with accomplishments or qualities. He says, this is a dictionary definition mediums exposed as tricksters and frauds. So we don't want to have fraudulent behavior to try to deceive the patient either. And that goes along with, he says, deceptions, the things that are given to give a mistaken impression of a person, to cause someone to believe something that is not true. So, you know, if you try to trick somebody, they're going to be quick onto it. These people who are manic and trigger these manic states, they're not going to be able to, they're going to know when you're trying to deceive or trick them or do something fraudulent to their thinking. So you have to listen quietly. Now we're going to go, it says here that we must, so basically Hahnemann is saying, you know, eventually the more you practice as a physician and the more you pretend to believe them to be possessed of reason, the more it will be natural. It will be more natural for you to believe what the patient is saying in this relationship that you have, and you will develop a sense of trust. He also goes on to say all kinds of external disturbing influences on their senses and disposition should be removed. And so we can think of anything, you know, sometimes even flowers in a room can trigger an allergic reaction to some people. Different things that trigger events, and if that triggers an emotional disturbance as well as a physical disturbance, you have to try and keep the environment as sparse and clean and provide things that are calming for that individual. Let's see, he says, there are no amusements for their clouded spirit. So trying to change their thought with perhaps, you know, you've heard of laughter treatment, laughter therapy. It is fun to do. Maybe if you're basically a healthy person, it's okay. But if you're insane, to go into a laughter fit is not going to help. And I'm wondering if we're going to keep going. I think we're going to be able to keep going into the second hour today, since I lost some time, and if people don't mind listening a little bit longer. No salutary distractions. I mean, sometimes if you've got a basically healthy person, you can distract them. And we're talking about kids very often, that you'll give them, if they're crying and vying for a sibling's toy, you can put something else in their hand to distract them away from the primary goal that they had of getting this other little thing. But he's telling us that that's not going to work in the state of mania. There are, it says, no soothing effects from conversation, from books, or other things for the soul that pines or frets in the chains of the diseased body. No invigoration for it, but the cure. It is only when the bodily health is changed for the better that tranquility and comfort again beam upon their mind. So finding the right way, and it's going to take time to do that, to find the anti-soric remedy to reach deeply into that person's vital force is going to take time. You often hear the patient speak about finding peace. Excuse me just a minute. I think I'm going to have a interruption. I'm
you said your show was cut off.
It's cut off?
That's why we're wrong.
Oh, is it? Okay. Okay, let me see. Are you able to hear? Nothing. Okay.
I'm reading the book.
Okay, let me see if I can...